Bonsoir tout le monde. Hello everyone. Bienvenue dans l'émission de Happy Hour sur Radio Anguin. That's right, it's me, Olia, back for the Happy Hour show on Tuesday night, live 7 to 8 on Radio Anguin. And I have a special guest with me. I'm very excited. The American author and travel show host, Lisa Anselmo. And she's written a memoir, and it's called My Part-Time Paris Life, How Running Away Brought Me Home. So we'll be speaking a little bit about this book, of course, but also maybe some of her other activities and the sort of extension of like the different adventures she's had to write this book on both sides of the Atlantic, because she still shares her life part-time between the United States and France. So we've got lots of things to talk about. And of course, we have music. She selected this huge list of music. And I thought, we're going to have to shortlist this. We'll have to break it down. So we've chosen a couple of songs, sort of French or Paris songs. And then we've got some New York songs for you. So how about we listen to that first song that she's chosen for us. And then we'll be back in just a moment for the interview. This is Paris Combo and Fibre de Verre.
Fibre de Verre. Je me suis allumée sans un éclair, sans même un brasier. Juste une lueur à mon intérieur. Ta chaleur a su trouver mon cœur. Mais demain, oui demain,
I'd like to welcome now into the studio Lisa Anselmo. Bonsoir. Hello.
Bonsoir. I'm happy to be here, Olia.
Thank you so much for coming out. In the happy hour. Exactly. Now, this is exciting. I guess it's not your first radio interview, though. I think you've gathered a bit of fame in the last while.
Done a few.
Good. Yeah. So it's good to have you here.
It's great to be here, and it's great to be here in this lovely little town.
Yes, which you'd never heard about before, probably.
Have
you been to Angeliba? So you might be back and go and visit the lake, and you can even hire little boats, little paddle boats, and go out on the lake.
It's so pretty here.
Yeah. It's got a holiday feel to it.
Yeah.
Now, tell us just quickly, you chose that cute little song, little French kind of musette sound for us. Does it bring back particular memories for you?
I bought that CD when my first trip back to Paris after many, many years. I came when I was a kid, and then I hadn't been back in 20 years, and I bought a bunch of music, and that was the CD that I bought. So it has a lot of memories of my very first time back in Paris.
Yeah. Yeah. And your first time was many, many years ago. You were a young girl, in fact.
Yeah,
is that right?
I was only 10 years ago. What are you saying? Yes, I was 16. It was
16,
a high school.
Okay.
It was our high school French class.
Wow.
It was Switzerland and France.
Wow.
Yeah.
And nice.
It was back in the day when Paris wasn't quite so clean and quite so nice. And you couldn't drink the water. And the toilet paper was the consistency of packing tissue. Yeah, it was special times.
So improvements have been made to welcome
just
guests.
Especially the toilet paper. But, you know, I didn't make a good first impression, Paris, on me at all. I actually hated it.
In fact,
the first sentence of my second chapter is, I hated Paris.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was young.
Did not expect that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was young and it wasn't really my favorite place in the world. I just went to practice my French class. And it was a tough, hard city. And I was from the country. You know, and then when I went 20 years later and I was living in New York for many years, of course the transition was easy. It was city to city. And of course it was, and they had the clean, they'd clean up the city quite a bit. And maybe they didn't clean it at all, but I came from New York and I fell in love the second time around. I mean, I definitely Paris planted its seed in me, but it didn't really bear fruit until 20 years later.
Well, it's good to know that eventually
it did.
Oh yes, and your country home you were talking about is back in Buffalo in New York State. Is that right?
Actually, you did your research. I was born in Buffalo, okay. But my dad was transferred when I was about three. We moved to a tiny one horse town in New Jersey, which everybody hated because we were city people. Buffalo is a big city, and so that was the countryside I grew up in. I spent my first 16 or so years there. And yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to New York when I went to Parsons School of Design. I went to art school and I moved to New York when I was 18.
And that also shaped you in many ways. New York is still New York, is, you know, I mean, that's probably why you can't really part with it, right? You still have to keep one foot in each country.
It's so true. Yeah, it's my home. Mm. And but Paris is my home too. And it's getting harder and harder and harder to leave when I'm here. It's really, you know, the part-time thing is starting to wear me down a bit. I'm not going to lie. But it's hard to let go of New York. And each city feeds me differently. You know, New York, I always say, charges me up, and Paris recharges me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And now I get my ideas in Paris, but I get things done in New York.
Ah. Yeah. I was going to ask you what the difference is, perhaps in the pace and what you do in each city. And
big difference.
Yeah, big difference.
Especially after I spent any amount of time here. You know, I was living here for 5 months when I was filming the series. And to go back to New York after that was such a shock. And this is a place I've lived since I'm 18. It just seemed huge and overwhelming, and the scale of the city, the height of the city. You can't see the sky, for example. The pace was so intense that I'd walk around on the sidewalk sort of afraid that someone was going to knock me over. It took me a month to adjust.
Yeah,
they're very different vibes.
I've heard a lot of people from New York say that Paris feels a bit more like a smaller town, a village, even though it's a big international city. It just feels so much more relaxed. The pace is different. Mm-hmm. You know,
they're very different. They're very different.
They're complementary, I guess.
I think so. At least for me.
So your book, My Part-Time Life in Paris, started off many years ago. Now, it's called a memoir, which usually we associate when people are much older than yourself. You're very young to be writing a memoir, but it actually comes from a place, from an experience, which for you is a very profound experience. So I was wondering if you could tell us how you got to putting this book together, because you've drawn on a lot of resources and a lot of experience, but it also grows from a very particular experience,
right.
Which is very important.
Yeah. So my mother in 2011 died of breast cancer, and I had been going to Paris about 12 years back and forth, you know, so it was my happy place. When my mother died, I was completely devastated. I built my entire life around her, and I didn't know who I was. After she died, I was completely lost, and I became very depressed, and I became obsessed with the idea of renting or buying an apartment in Paris. With what money? I have no idea. But I just researching apartments in Paris was a hopeful, forward-looking thing, and it helped me through the depression. And then I did get something tiny, tiny and affordable. And that changed my life, because it was a very bold move for me to do that. And, you know, it's not the sort of thing I would have done. Very risky.
And on your own?
Yeah, and
this
reckless.
Is off your own back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It felt very reckless. And if my mother had been alive, I wouldn't have done it. And that was such a bold move that it changed me. And then other bold moves happened. And the next thing you know, I'm leaving a very comfy, very lucrative job in the magazine business in New York and moving here. So, that's the journey in the book it's really about finding purpose in Paris. It's really from a point of absolute devastation to a place of hope and to a place where I learned to seize my own happiness with both hands for the first time in my life.
But writing, I think I've had a look at a little bit just for listeners to know that you've got a website under your name, lisaanselmer.com.
Right.
You've also got your blog, My
Part
Time Paris, which is full. I mean, we can see that you're a writer by nature. You love writing. It's just, you've got articles about all sorts of different things, personal and also interviews you've done with people.
Mm-hmm.
Writing's a thing for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I've written articles and I do some journalism. Yeah, the blog is really the place to go in a way, more than my website, myparttimeparislife.com. Because from there you can get to the series, you can get to the book, you can read the articles, you can see the interviews I've done. And it's definitely, I've written since I was 8 years old. I got my first diary at 8 years old for a birthday gift. Karen Carpenter gave it to me, not the singer, but my friend.
Oh.
And that was it. And I journaled ever since then.
Yeah.
But I always saw writing as just a therapy. I didn't start taking it seriously.
A hobby or something personal that you did for yourself.
Yeah, I did for myself. Yeah. I didn't take it seriously as a career option until many years later.
Mm.
I just started writing for BonjourParis.com, and that was the beginning.
Okay. So the blog writing was well underway before the book. Like, it was kind of laying the foundation
a little bit,
for the book in a way. Mm-hmm. You had the I don't know, the guts of it a little bit.
I mean, I wrote the blog really, the blog was designed as articles. Mm-hmm. They're easy to read. They're 3 minutes long. You know, there's a theme, you learn from it. And I did that really almost as a portfolio for mm-hmm. articles writing. And I really wrote the blog for my friends and family who wanted to know what was going on in the apartment in Paris. I didn't expect to get such a huge following, and I didn't expect to get a book deal because of it. Like, I didn't expect that at all.
So someone came to you knocking at your door saying, I like your blog?
That is correct. Wow. It's very crazy. The day I decided to take a package at work, which was the hardest thing I've ever done, because I walked away from a big fat job. That day I was featured in New York Magazine, which is a local New York City magazine. And an editor at St. Martin's Press saw that article, went to my blog. The next day there was an email in my inbox. That's crazy.
How's that for timing and sign of the stars
exactly.
or whatever?
That's Heavens. The universe saying, girl, just bear with us. If you were just willing to jump, we have the next phase of your life under you waiting for you. And I did. I just jumped. And then the universe said, book deal. And it was crazy because I envisioned that happening so many times. And it did happen just
Yeah, like
that
in
way.
Your wildest dreams, you know, sort of.
And I know how lucky I am because that doesn't happen. I mean, I had a couple chapters written, but I hadn't written the whole book. And because I hadn't given away the book in the blog, mm-hmm. That's why there was like.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because it's
there
not
was something
really.
To build, mm-hmm. There was something to build on from there that was not necessarily all in the blog.
That's right. Yeah. The deeper story, the backstory mm-hmm. is fleshed mm-hmm. out in the book.
Yeah. So it took you a period of how long to actually write all the chapters?
If I was left to my own devices, I'd still be writing the book. Okay. I'm a tweaker ad nauseum. I had 6 months to write the book from beginning to end, including rewrites. I was sweating it because, and I have trouble reading it because I'm always seeing things I would change. But I worked with the editor, you know, I would send it to her. She'd give me a few comments and then I'd send her the first round. She gave me her overall comments. I did another pass. And then she said, okay, I love it, but would you be willing to go deeper? So she pushed me to do more of the deep backstory, the mm-hmm. sort of the gut-wrenching stuff. And I sat for 2 weeks in a little apartment that I was renting, because we'll get to this, I'm sure. Okay. I had a leak in my apartment that so I couldn't live there. And for 2 weeks, I just rewrote like all the deep stuff. And literally the pile of tissues was growing by my chair as the hours. So that's how it went. I mean, literally, I banged it out in 6 months, which for a perfectionist like me is a nightmare.
Wow. Yeah. Well, bravo. Now, this book, we can find it in bookshops because it's a physical book. It's not just, is there an e-version
yes,
as well?
There's
it's
a hardcover.
It's hardcover.
E-book, and mm-hmm. there's audiobook. I narrated audiobook. The audiobook.
Wow.
Yeah, and you can get, obviously it's on Amazon, but it's in Paris, you can get it at W.H. Smith. There's mm-hmm. actually, I think there's still some signed copies there. I signed a bunch of copies that are there. And then I think they may have some copies at still at Shakespeare and Co. But absolutely online at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
And again, digital also or audiobook. If you're an audiobook person, you can hear, listen to me for 2 hours.
Which sounds like it's coming back as a bit of a, like there was a sort of a trend some time ago and that kind of faded away and people were on their Kindles and whatever. And now it seems like people like the books and the audio.
Yeah. Huge audiobook audiences now. Yeah. It's really growing and they wanted
me to do it. Was it fun to record it?
It was intense. I've done voiceovers, so I had that experience and I read at the pace of a voiceover actor, but it was really intense because I'm reading it, I'm crying, I had to stop. It was 4 days in a tiny box, not a nice big studio this. I was in a tiny box,
Just all alone with the text and sort of reliving mm-hmm. stuff.
Reliving it. Yeah.
It's quite intense.
Intense. Mm. But it was a great experience.
Well, we'll come back to the book because there's a couple of extracts you might be able to read for us. But I thought we might have a song break and we'll continue with the interview in just a moment. Maybe read an extract and, you know, I've got loads more questions. I probably will never get through them all. I'm always overly ambitious with my questions.
Just cut me off. I'll keep talking. You said, listen,
but
I got another question.
We want you to talk. That's the whole thing. That's why you're here. But let's have a song and you can tell us why you chose a song. You've chosen Le Tigre, which is the name of the group. My Metro Card. Now, this is your New York selection songs.
Right.
What's the story with this song?
Just because it's fun. And, you know, and I write about the metro, the difference in the metros in my blog.
Oh, yeah. Transport.
Right. Yeah.
Differences, et cetera.
I think it's called A Tale of Two Cities as a blog post. And I write about, I was in the New York metro and I put my hand in my pocket and I pulled out two tickets, a ticket metro and the New York metro card. And I forgot for a minute where I was. Wait, which one do I use? So that's why I picked that one.
Yeah.
Metro card.
You're listening to Radio Enghien. This is the Happy Hour Show, and I'm with my guest Lisa Anselmo, who's a writer, and she shares her time between Paris and New York. I mean, who could complain about that? And she's in the studio with me, and we're talking about her book, and which is called My Part-Time Paris Life. Getting a little bit less part-time, I think, as time goes by. But I wanted to ask you a question about the book signings, because you've just been to the States. You've been signing, and you even went to Buffalo and mm-hmm. did some book signings, and in Paris as well. And yeah, I was just wondering what that experience was like for you. Like, what kinds of things did people ask you? And I don't know, what maybe you saw your book from a completely different perspective? I don't know.
It's been... it's funny. I'm a homebody, so the touring takes a lot out of me. But once I'm there, and I don't really just do a book signing. I tend to do actually sort of, I don't want to call them lectures because it sounds boring, but I'll do
a presentation.
It's a presentation. Some actually have visuals, you know, and everything. I've done the New York Public Library, and I've done a Barnes and Nobles and things like that. And because their theme, because the book really has a lot of themes, but it's really a theme of taking risks, change your life. I've done 5 Ways to Be Happy. I mean, I do these kinds of presentations. So people, they really sell out, and people really come, and they're really there, and they're present, and they're enthusiastic. Some come with the books in hand, which is always intense. And the questions are always brilliant, and they're usually very deep. And some people say things like, Your book changed my life. It inspired me to start my business. Because I write about, for me, Paris was the thing that, the catalyst that changed my life. Mm. And to pursue a bigger, happier life, the mm-hmm. life I was meant to live. And that's what I talk about in the talks, and that's what the book is about. But for me, it's Paris. For someone else, it could be anything. You know, leaving a dead-end job, getting out of a bad relationship, whatever it is, somebody has their own version of Paris. Mm. So I speak to that, and it's been really incredibly rewarding and very moving to connect with people who've read your book and who come with just these big wide eyes and these open arms and say thank you. It's amazing.
Oh, that's nice.
It's been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So you were able to sort of go back to places that you went to West Coast. You did East Coast and West Coast.
Right. I did San Francisco. I'd never been, if you can believe
really?
It. What an incredible city. But
isn't
apparently
amazing?
I'd always wanted to be there, because all I did was walk around with a huge smile on my face, taking pictures of everything. I went a couple days early to be a bit of a tourist.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And then my next round, I'll go back. I'll do like LA. I'll do probably Dallas, Texas.
Okay. So you've got more dates.
Yeah, more dates.
Dates
I need
in the States.
Hit Chicago, Miami. And, you know, people write all the time, say, are you coming to Toronto? I have a kind of a good following in Toronto, so I may do Canada too.
Good.
Yeah, so it's continuing. That's why I always tell people to go to my website, My Part-Time Paris Life, and go to book events and just keep checking it.
And you update
and
it.
And I update it regularly,
I
did Paris. Paris I actually did first. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing some more events here in Paris. On June 10th, I'm doing salon sessions at Club Reye.
Okay.
And then I'm doing some things in Nice, but that's too far for your audience. So we don't have to go.
Okay. So things planned in France, things planned in the States. Mm-hmm. And the book actually came out, when did it actually physically come out?
October.
On the stands? It was October last year. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's really quite fresh off the, I mean.
It's definitely.
You know, in the middle of your promotional period.
Yeah,
right
very
now.
Much so. And I'll probably be promoting this thing till I die, because, you know, the writers really, it's really up to us to do
really?
The promotion and keep the books alive.
Really?
And keep them. In
so
demand.
The publisher does what does the publisher
they're
do?
They're behind
do
they you for of, like the first 3 months is the main launch time, so they're really behind you for them. But then they've got other new launches, so you're kind of they're kind of like, go fly, little birdie, fly. And you go and you're like,
you'll
oh, thank
fine.
God, I have a background in marketing.
So you're
I'd
doing this by yourself. You're setting up the book
all by myself, and it's my own dime. Yeah,
you contact the bookstores and the chains, and
they'll have me there.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I go in person a lot of times when I'm visiting a city to sign the books they have. And sometimes I'll ask if they do events, and they'll often invite me back. A lot of the events I've done, I've been invited to do, like Alliance Française in San Francisco. The New York Public Library actually invited me. It was very prestigious. I was huge.
Oh, wow.
In August, they sent me the invitation before the book was out. So, I was really, really excited. Most of them have been by invite. So I've been very lucky.
Wow. Yeah. Very nice. And just to remind people that the publishers is Thomas Dunn Books / St. Martin's Press.
Exactly.
Okay. Great. So My Part-Time Paris Life. Now, you're more or less, well, you mentioned earlier before we jump a step, can we take a little dive into your book? Since we're talking about the book signings, this is where you sometimes read extracts from your book. So I was thinking, before we get ahead of ourselves, I don't want to forget, just read a couple. Have you got enough light in the studio?
Yeah, I can manage it. I should know this by heart, right?
So here's Lisa Anselmo reading from her book, My Part-Time Paris Life, a couple of pages from chapter six.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's called, I'm Sure If I Could Only Understand You, I'd Like You.
Aha, yes. Something to do with linguistic challenges.
Yes, you think you know the language, so you try to live in a neighborhood where nobody speaks English. Bonjour, Fonfonfon, the proprietor of a clothing boutique greeted me. Ah oui, Fonfonfon. My gut tightened. Please, dear God, what was she saying? Was it about the weather? Were they having a special sale? Was there ink on my face? Squeezing my lips together in what I hoped was a smile, but was more likely a grimace, I tipped my head to one side, like a dog who hears his master's voice but grasps only sounds of intent. I'd caught about every third word, promises of meaning, but like the proverbial carrot dangling before me just beyond my reach. How is it that my French wasn't up to the task of local life in Paris? I'd done pretty well up to now, ordering in restaurants, telling the taxi drivers where to take me, buying shoes at Bazaar de l'Hôtel de Ville, you know, the important stuff. But my neighborhood, where no one spoke a lick of English, was a whole new world. This was getting to know you French, talking about politics in a bar French, making a deeper connection French. And all I could make out was fa, fa, fa. What's French for? I'm totally screwed.
Okay. Now, just like, be honest, your French has obviously progressed a lot.
Yes.
I mean, this is going back a few years.
Yes.
With, you know, it's just coming out as sounds.
Yeah.
But today, how's your French today?
You know, I'm still terrible at it, but I'm much more fearless at it. I wouldn't even dare to try to speak French on the radio. To your audience. But my boyfriend only He speaks Turkish and French, and I only speak English and French, so all we get is French. But I study every week with somebody privately.
Okay.
And I study every day. So, and of course I'm living the life. But I'm not learning anything from my boyfriend because I'm sure he makes the same mistakes I do. But it forces me to really, really just go.
Just go.
What was holding me back was just fear of not being correct, fear of lack of, you know, I'm a perfectionist and
right.
I would just be stymied.
Yeah, the idea of making mistakes and being a bit foolish or seeing it sort of hesitating.
Yeah.
And,
now I just kind of throw it out there and I hope
just see what happens.
Understandable, you know.
And if you had a positive reaction to that, have people been encouraging you? Yeah. French people, I mean, they've
very,
been encouraging
very much.
Shopkeepers and whatnot.
Yeah, everyone's very, very sweet. No, but it's definitely better. And because I can understand people now, that's the important thing. I don't panic.
Yes.
I used to try to go into a store and I would gear up. I would be stressed just going into a store. So you'd be stressed all day pretty much. And now I walk right in, I chit chat and you know, and I stumble. It doesn't matter if I say present tense when I mean past tense, conditional, don't even let me go there. you know, but it's that fear is gone.
Yes.
I think that's the most important part.
Yes.
At some point I just turned a corner and I just opened my mouth and let whatever was going to fall out, fall out.
Now the book, is the book to be translated at some point?
I don't know. I mean, the licensing is very complicated. So if the French publishers are interested in it, yeah, they will translate it into French. It was bought in the Czech Republic bought the rights. And so it's just been released May 1st or May 8th. It was released in the Czech Republic. So I saw the cover and it's called, the title's totally different, but my name in Czech is Lisa Anselmova.
Oh,
I love it.
Oh, nice.
I was very excited to see the cover. And they did a different cover, but it's very pretty. And I think it was called, like, My Life in Paris, The Dream is Real, or something like that. But
are they allowed to take creative liberties like that?
Well, they usually
have
to.
Because of a linguistic
reason?
Okay.
Because they buy the license. So they twist it to suit the market, absolutely.
Okay.
But yeah, Lisa Anselmova. I sound so much
How
more
exotic.
I sound so like tall and blonde and sexy and, you know, that name.
We could always buy a wig and you could go up and do a, you know, book tour. It's like my new look.
But I am going to do an event there.
You're going to do an event?
In Prague.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Oh, you should.
It's not planned. We're talking about it.
And Prague is beautiful.
Never been so excited.
Oh, Prague is beautiful.
That's this book. That little apartment that I bought has opened up my life to everything. Things I could have never imagined. And the book as well. It's, once you say yes, this sounds hokey, but once you say yes to the universe, I always say it doesn't guarantee good things will always happen to you, but it will guarantee that you will keep marching forward toward your destiny. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know your destiny as much because we have limitations in our minds.
Mm.
And I just kept saying yes, and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger is my life.
Yeah. And some of the themes actually on your blog deal with this, taking the steps, being brave, you know, kind of going, oh, this is scary. It's exciting, but it's a scary. And, you know, the steps that you've gone through. So you've really been able to, you know, it's a journal basically of your experience.
Of that,
so
exactly.
You can see the different levels that you've been through. Mm-hmm. And so myparttimeparislife.com, that's the blog.
Mm-hmm.
And you have access to other things.
Right. My series is also called My Part-Time Paris Life.
Which is brilliant. Listeners, you must go onto the, well, it's a YouTube link, isn't it? It goes to your YouTube channel.
Well, you can see it. You can view it on the blog itself, My Part-Time Paris Life. And
tell us about this series because it's not just about you. You've got interviews with people, Parisians.
Exactly. Yes. So I didn't want to be like, here I am having cheese and here I am drinking in a bar or whatever, in a cafe.
It's not just one big selfie.
No. I'm so not that girl. So I feature, this season is Parisians. Next season, hopefully, is going to be expats. And I feature people who, like me, took a risk to change their lives and found success. So the premiere episode's up right now. And that's, we interviewed Christophe Vasseur, who's the boulanger at Du Pain et des Idées in the 10th. His story is fascinating because, yes, he's a very persnickety boulanger and a very traditional boulanger. But that's not even the story. The story is that he changed his life at 33.
Mm-hmm. Which is something I have to say quite unusual for French people.
That's right. And we talk about how hard that was for him and how he got no support. And people thought he was out of his gourd, out of his mind because he was doing that. And so that's the point. If people think it's hard for them in America, this guy did it against all odds.
Mm.
And he has some great advice on, you know, how
following your heart, your dreams.
My goal is really to inspire people and to change lives, you know, and because of that, I also walk them through some of my hard times as well. Like I do that in the book quite a bit, as you know, and on the blog as well. I'm very honest when I'm having a down time.
Yes, it is very personal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I want people to know there isn't some magic. It's not like the magic people who are kissed by the stars who suddenly get to have all their dreams.
Mm.
I'm not that girl. And I've still achieved and will continue to achieve the life, a bigger life or the life I want because you just, at some point, you just have to know that you deserve it. You know, you deserve it. And that's
and accept the, good things.
That's right. Acceptance is huge.
Yeah. And it's like, I deserve it. I'm worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm open.
And that's right. And so that's really, my book is really a journey of finding my own self-worth. You know, I talk very honestly about my mother and the first moment when I realized what worthlessness was. Because she was putting her makeup, I was 4 years old, she was putting her makeup on in the mirror, and I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world.
Mm.
And she looked at her reflection, and she said, ugly. And that's the first chapter.
Really?
I talk about that in the first chapter.
And you were
chapter.
So young, and
I
you
opened
remember
the book
that.
With that story, because it tipped my entire world on its side.
Really? Yeah,
and that of was course. The moment I learned about worthlessness, and that was the moment I learned to look at myself and think, maybe I'm ugly too. It's intense, you know. She always told me how beautiful I was, but I could never get, like I call it the ugly mirror in the book, I could never get past the ugly mirror. And it affected everything and made me become a perfectionist, and that actually became a huge impediment to my achieving my dream.
But your mother was very, very supportive of you, of everything you did. You had a close relationship. Did she also want you to move forward?
Or was
she was very protective of you?
She wasn't so supportive some of the times, and I talk about that in the book. Mm-hmm. It was a very codependent relationship, and in some ways she held me back. I don't think she meant to.
No.
But she did. And she put fear into us, her daughters. And so we then held ourselves back.
Mm-hmm.
Both my sister and I lurched into our lives full throttle after she passed.
Is your sister older or younger?
She's older. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is not to say anything against our mother. And she wanted the best for us. And she taught us to seek the highest. In fact, that's on her headstone. Mm-hmm. She taught us to seek the highest. Because she always did. It's just we learn by watching our parents. That's how it happens.
Yes.
And if you read the book, you'll see. I mean, you'll see the kind of codependence and how she held me back and how she could really kind of put the kibosh on your dreams and how I overcame that. Because at some point, the parents stop being the reason you hold yourself back. At some point, it's you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just learned to take responsibility for myself.
Yeah.
The journey when I came to live here. Because it's like sink or swim, baby.
Yes, I'll say. Now, how about we have another little song break? Should we listen to another French song? You've chosen a song by Carla Bruni.
Yeah.
Which is Quelqu'un m'a dit.
Yeah.
Little word about this particular song?
I actually have a funny reason why. So I used to work at Mademoiselle magazine in New York back in the day when she was a model. And I was working on, for the stupidest, longest time, a layout of her. And it was like Carla Bruni and all her favorite things. And I don't know, I just have a funny, it's just a personal thing. I had to redesign it like 10 times because the creative director was insane. And so that is just so, then when I found out that she actually also sung, I was like, I got to get this CD. So
yeah.
I know I've picked stuff that's all really old and I don't think it bodes well for me, but these all just tickle me in a different way.
Yeah. Well, it's part of your story, you know, in a way. And an interesting anecdote that you've also been able to, you were linking in your New York experience, the fashion magazine world, with somebody...
Yeah.
You know, from over here.
Yeah.
So interesting connection there.
Destiny.
Women can come back and talk a little bit more about how your magazine world experience has perhaps helped you with your new career. Let's listen to that and we'll get back to our interview in just a moment. You're listening to Happy Hour on Radio Enghien.
On me dit que nos vies ne valent pas grand-chose, elles passent en un instant comme frânent les roses. On me dit que le temps qui glisse est un salaud, que de nos chagrins il s'en fait des manteaux. Pourtant quelqu'un m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. C'est quelqu'un qui m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. Serait-ce possible alors? On dit que le destin se moque bien de nous, qu'il ne nous donne rien et qu'il nous promet tout. Paraît que le bonheur est à portée de main, alors on tend la main et on se retrouve fou. Pourtant quelqu'un m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. C'est quelqu'un qui m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. Serait-ce possible alors? Serait-ce possible alors?
And roll.
Yeah, dude, like, I think we're the band.
I've been waiting for you boys all day. Get on stage.
Yo.
No sleep till...
Guess who? The Beastie Boys on Radio Enghien, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. And Brooklyn, well, being part of that fabulous landscape that is New York, which is where my guest Lisa spent so many years. And that song would have brought back memories. It was very different to the Carla Bruni song. We wanted to illustrate together the sort of chopping and changing of genres, because Lisa's got, like, you know, these different experiences from the different cities. And that song for you probably reminds you of the good old days.
I know. New York in the grittiest days. It's so true. I definitely picked music. I mean, the French music is also much more softer and much more, you know, upbeat. And then the New York music is much grittier and much heavier hitting. It's how the cities are for me,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to capture the vibe of the two energies as much as I could. I mean, I'm sure for people who've grown up in Paris, it can feel like a hard life in a gritty city. For me, you know, it's all the beautiful things, and the music is very sort of like Carla Bruni, and you know, to me, and you know, and it's just how it is. They're very different, and each one touches a different part of my soul in a different way. And maybe Paris is where I'm heading. Maybe I'm ready to leave the grit, the edge, the tough, hard exterior behind, and be all soft and vulnerable, you know, for the rest of my life.
So going back to the New York, well, your magazine career, so you had this solid, work in,
20
what were you doing
years.
Exactly?
Yeah, I was creative director in magazine publishing, so I worked on both sides, we call both sides of the business, where I actually designed the magazines, but then I moved over to what they call the business side, where I worked on the marketing side, and we would work with advertisers to, you know, do advertorials, things like that, or create the presentations that the salespeople would go to advertisers to try to get ad dollars. So I've worked on both sides of the business, and I know the business inside out, and I've worked on magazines. My last job was at People Magazine, which is the largest magazine brand in the U.S., one of the most famous brands. And I've worked, you know, my other brands are like InStyle, like I mentioned Mademoiselle, which is gone now. But I worked on the launch of Allure magazine.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had an incredible career, and it was hard to walk away from it. But that business has changed quite a bit. And it's kind of hard to watch. But it was an incredible period of my life. And now I completely changed my life and my career. But the marketing part of it, because I had so many years of marketing experience, that has helped me a lot
as
I build this new brand out, my part-time Paris life, because it's not just the book. It's obviously a website. It's a
brand,
it's a travel
isn't it?
Series.
Is it my part-time productions?
My part-time. Right. It's right. Exactly. You really did your research. Right. My part-time Paris life, you consider the brand, and then the production company is just called Part-Time Paris Productions.
Yeah.
I couldn't fit it in the logo. But that's the thing. I design my own logo. I put my own partnership because I do partnership tags.
Because you had that sort of foundation,
right?
As well.
I create my own presentations, and you know, and they're very visual. And you know, I can do my own, because I also had the experience in front of the camera, behind the camera, because I was also an opera singer.
And there's another chapter of your life, which in 10 minutes we'll quickly.
I know,
delve
but the point
your,
is, you never know where what? You know. There are no mistakes. My life is perfectly queued up for where I am now. Everything that seemed like a variant path,
a detour or something, is all coming together.
All comes together.
Yeah, you need your theatrical skills, you need your marketing, you need your, you know, you've got a good sense of image. I mean, your websites and stuff are really beautiful. And the films, congratulations, they are beautiful.
Thank you. That's Nomadic Frames. You know, they're a tiny production company of two people. They, like me, they chucked everything, sold everything, and they're traveling the world doing these travel documentaries. Okay. Nomadic Frames are amazing.
Oh, yeah, no, very good. No, so you do have this sense of image and a sense of being able to sort of put yourself out there and sort of, I think you carry the brand like a pro. You're really professional about that. I mean, you can tell.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, like you never know what.
Because I was thinking she's got a team like 10 people behind her.
I know. Good. That's what you're supposed to think. But now everyone knows, oh man, you ruined it.
No, but you're expanding though, because, you know, Part-Time Paris Productions, I mean, can go anywhere from here. So
exactly.
And you're going global, so.
I am going global. I am. From your lips to God's ears.
But for now, I mean, until now, you've been, you know, driving this thing.
You
got
to do it yourself. You got to be your own boss. That's my best advice for everyone. Don't wait. Don't wait for other people. That's how the series started. I was trying to pitch it to Travel Channel.
Else. Yeah.
And I didn't know how. And I thought, wait a minute, I know how to make a video. Mm. I've done this for as part of my job. And I know this production company. Let's just make it happen. And we did. I just put them up in an Airbnb and gave them a per diem, and they were happy to do it. And we just made it happen.
Just go and do it. If you got the idea, just go and do it.
Do it, yeah.
And at least if you, then you might need some other professional help, but at least if you've got the kind of the, you know, sort of a working copy, then you can at least say, well, I've done something. I've done the first step. Now I need help with the
next
step. But at least something's out there.
You just have to take the first step. I know it sounds silly, but
it's hard sometimes, isn't it, that first step?
That's the hardest step.
Rolling.
We wait, because that kind of life-altering change, that kind of jarring life-altering change, you can never be prepared for. You just have to start. There's nothing you can, no money, not enough money, not enough preparation, because it's too huge. It's, again, like I say in the book, there are a reason that skid marks are left when you veer off course, because it is disruptive, and it will feel uncomfortable because you're changing your life and making it bigger and you're not used to it. But you just have to start. And what I found is once I just started, the next stepping stone lit up before me, and then I was like, okay, take this step. And when I didn't know how to do something, someone I would talk about, and someone would say, oh, well, here, call this person. You know, it just gets served up just at the moment you need it. The problem is we see the goal.
Yeah, and it's quite far away.
And it's daunting. Don't see the goal. Make your goals by week, by day,
steps.
If you have to. And then you'll see, you'll get there. I mean, I'm looking back 3 years now, and I never imagined I'd be here.
Yeah.
So yeah. Just step by step. That's the only way, but you have to just keep moving forward.
So now one of these very important steps, which you speak about in the book as well, is the apartment buying and also some of the trauma that went through with tell us just quickly a couple of the challenges you had to face.
Lemon. I didn't use an expat real estate agency, which for anyone who, you know, is not local and you're trying to buy from overseas, expat real estate agency, oh my God, do not do it on your own, which I did because I was a dope. And I had this horrible misfortune that my neighbor, and this is in the book. In fact, the leak is a character in the book. It's so funny because on Amazon, I have a lot of great reviews on Amazon. Thank you, everyone. But one guy's, the only fault he found was that the leak wasn't resolved by the end of the story. And I thought, dude, the book would not be published yet. It took 18 months. So the guy had a leak in his shower and he wouldn't repair it. So I had to go. Well, the problem was he wouldn't repair because he thought it was the syndic, the managing agent's responsibility. Right. And they said, no, it's your responsibility. And they kept kicking the hot potato. Yeah. And in the meanwhile, my apartment was destroyed. And the mold that built in, I had to leave. So I actually spent 2 years like a nomad renting apartments around Paris or staying on friends' couches and stuff. Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Even though you were the owner, a proud owner of a flat, you could not use it.
Couldn't use it. For 2 out of the 4 years I owned it, I couldn't live in it. 18 months later, they finally fixed it. And when I do a presentation, I show the before and after photos of the before the leak and after. And there's always someone in the audience who goes, oh, that's a shame. I'm like, it's a shame. But and then after it was repaired, I had to dry the apartment out for a year almost.
Yeah.
Before I could renovate it. Yeah. And then I finally moved back in last June.
Oh, and actually you have a video on your website that that gives a guided tour of your flat, all nicely decorated as
you
wanted.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, so again, in my series, we have mini episodes, and one of the mini episodes is a tour of my apartment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, which you're obviously, you know, very proud of, and you know, it's been a huge step and as part of that process. It's, so definitely, if you're out there and you're looking at property buying, maybe the expat agency is the way to go if you are from outside of France.
Oh my God,
and
please, don't want to get
involved in the ins and outs.
No, please. I beg of you, don't do it on your own. There's always some guy that's like, oh, I'll do it. I'm like, whatever. Guys are the worst. You're like, oh, I can do it. I'm like, no, trust me. You need to call this person.
Yeah.
I am living proof. I am the poster child of what
you
not
survived.
To do.
You survived. Yes. Yeah. Now, tell me, all this dealing with all these sort of challenges and things, like improvising sometimes, it sounds like you've had to improvise. You mentioned like sort of stage and theatre and stuff like that, which was maybe part of your, was it part of your art studies or was it parallel to what you're doing? It seems like you're quite good at being on your toes and
catching hot potatoes. I wanted to be a musician and a performer all my life.
Really?
And I actually pursued opera very seriously while I had my other career. And it just never really gelled for whatever reason. I was in my own way, I'm sure. But I spent many, many years on stage since I was young. And I have an uncle who's in show business. So I kind of have that show business family. But it's very much always been a part of me. And you're right. It does help me to improvise on my feet when I'm doing presentations, for sure. Nothing distracts me. No noise. Because I've sung in noisy bars for years. Mm. People could be talking. I don't care. Someone comes in, they're yik-yakking by the door. I just keep talking, you know? And it helps, too, when we're filming the videos.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because you're very comfortable in front of the camera. Yeah. And you really seem very relaxed and, you know, just, at ease and natural. Mm-hmm.
Everything's come
to
bear.
All your skills.
Mm-hmm. That's why just do what you like.
Yeah.
You know, and be good at it and know that it's going to get you where you need to be.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the magic. It sounds so stupid and trite, but it is that simple.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah. We complicate our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Christopher Sir said, you know, we know what we want to be when we're young.
Mm.
And then we spend the rest of our lives dismissing that as a childish whim.
Mm-hmm.
And he always wanted to be a baker since he was a boy, and his parents were both doctors or lawyers or something. They said, "Nuh-uh,
you're going to university.
Yeah.
You're going to do
business school."
Yep.
And so he did, and then he just hit a wall at 33, and he said, "No, I'm not going to live this way anymore." And that's I hit that same wall, but I didn't know what was next. So I actually used a life coach, which I highly recommend, Laura Berman Fortgang, and she helped me realize what my mission was, and it was to inspire people and change lives. And then the book came, and then the rest is unfolding. Sometimes you just don't need to know what it's going to be. You just need to keep
to
yourself
know that you're
happy.
On a path. Yeah, you're on a path.
Do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, because that will get you there. Because your destiny, you may not know it yet. You know, and You're headed there. But stay where you're happy.
Well, Lisa Anselmo, thank you very much for being my guest on the Happy Hour show tonight. We'll have to wrap it up, play our last song and say our farewells. But thank you again. It's been wonderful. It's been a pleasure. And good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. So my Part-Time Paris Life, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it at W.H. Smith here in Paris. Blog, same name, My Part-Time Paris Life. And the series, all the same name.
All same name. Yep. And I'm sure more to come. More chapters will be written down the track. I'm sure there are more ideas bubbling away in your mind. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Alia. Fun.
Yeah, we'll play your last song as a kind of an exit song. It's by Plastic Bertrand, sort of an oldie but a goodie, isn't it?
Yeah, this was on the charts when I first came to Paris as a kid. So there you go.
And it's called Ça Plaine Pour Moi. Everything's going well. Everything's going cool. You know, we could roughly translate it as that, which sounds like it's exactly your case. So congratulations on the book, and hopefully we can catch up with you with the next project.
Definitely.
Sur mon lit à bouffer sa langue en buvant trop mon whisky. Quant à moi, peu dormi, vie débris, mais j'ai dû dormir dans la gouttière où j'ai eu un flash. En quatre couleurs. Allez hop, un matin, une louloute est venue chez moi, poupée de cellophane, cheveux chinois, un sparadrap, une gueule de bois, a bu ma bière dans un grand verre en caoutchouc. Ça plane pour moi.